welcome to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast. My name is Peter Bean, and I'll be your host. On today's episode, we have Jay Blue from Blue Jays From Away joining us. How's it going, Jay?
It's going great. How are you, Peter?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Always a pleasure.
So before we get into today's featured players from your spring training rounds, I wanted to ask you about Marcus Stroman. I know you're an avid follower of the minor leagues, and you wrote the minor league handbook, so I'm working under the assumption that you watched Stroman's recent start. What did you think?
Well, you're correct. I did watch it. Thankfully, MILB.TV, the minor league broadcasting system, is fantastic, and you can get just about every AAA game. So I guess this is turning into a commercial for them. you can get just about every AAA game, as well as some AA games and single A games. And the Buffalo Bisons are really great with their broadcast crew, and they do broadcast home games with multiple camera angles, and it's a really professionally done broadcast. So I got a good view of Marcus Stroman in all of his dominance last night in Buffalo.
What did you see? What was different about what you saw last night versus what you've seen in the past from him?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think last night he was really just firing on all cylinders. The last time I saw him was actually opening day in Buffalo. When I did go down, it was very cold, but I did go down to Buffalo for their opening game. And it was, you know, he just didn't look like he was at 100% in terms of his location, in terms of his pitches working. And yesterday, it just looked like everything was working. He was missing, you know, he was hitting his spots really, really well. But when he missed outside of the strike zone. I think his Achilles heel, and I think what a lot of people saw during spring training, was that when he was missing in the middle of a plate, and he was missing up. And for a guy like him who is not throwing the ball with the best downward plane because of his height, the ball will be hit in the air a lot more against him. And when he misses up, hitters, especially major league hitters, can really hit the ball a long way off of him. That said, you know, yesterday he was really missing down. He was missing off of the plate rather than in the middle. And he was really playing his off-speed stuff off of his fastball really well. You know, he does throw the two types of fastballs, the four-seamer as well as the cutter. And the cutter has some really nice late break. It's only a couple of miles an hour slower than his four-seam fastball. And I think it's a really great pitch to give the hitters a different look. You know, it's going to look like the four-seam fastball coming out of his hand, but, you know, it sort of takes on a different direction when it's about, you know, 5 to 10 feet from the plate. His off-speed pitches also looked really, really good. I mean, I was very impressed by his curveball. I think some people were calling it a slider, but it just looks like it's got far too much break to be a true slider. It may be more of a slurve, but it's a good 12 to 6 slider. And his changeup looks like it's really, really coming along. And, you know, there's been a lot of stuff written about Stroman over the past couple of days. People have been really coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, this is, you know, he's ready to be ready to be promoted. You know, I did write something last night about him basically saying, I don't necessarily think he should be promoted just yet.
Now, I know you don't think he should be. Do you think he will be?
That is a very good question. I have been wrong about many things in terms of what the Blue Jays actually do. You know, as an armchair GM, I would probably leave him down in the minors for probably another month or two, let him get a little bit more experience under his belt, let him work against some of the better lineups. That's the one kind of qualifier I have with his start yesterday, is that the Louisville Bats are not a very strong offensive team. So he wasn't exactly, you know, cutting a swath through the Pawtucket Red Sox or the Indianapolis Indians. Both teams have much better offenses, or even the Durham Bulls. So there's definitely, that's the sort of one qualifier there is to that start. from yesterday is that he wasn't doing it against the league's best, and there weren't too many elite hitting prospects or even a lot of guys with a lot of major league experience who are now back in the minors for him to be really tested by. So I think it was a fantastic performance, and everything that he was doing was great, but I don't think the opposition was as strong as what he's going to face in the major leagues, and so I think he got away with a little bit more than he might have had he been doing that in Toronto. As for whether they bring him up or not, that's, you know, the big question. I think Dustin McGowan bought himself at least another start or two with what he was able to do yesterday. I think he got, you know, into the seventh inning, he got close to the 100 pitch mark, and I think you could argue that he would have done a better job had he stayed in the game than what some of the relievers did. So I think McGowan really made a case for himself to stay in the rotation for now. I guess it buys a little bit more time for Stroman to keep polishing his craft and keep working on whatever. I believe it's Randy St. Clair who's the pitching coach down there in Buffalo. So I think the extra time is going to serve him well. I think Dustin McGowan still has a role to play on the Blue Jays, and if he can stay in the rotation, obviously the Blue Jays will be getting the most bang for their buck. The only issue is going to be to see what happens with the rest of the bullpen. I don't think you can do much with guys like Santos and Cecil and Delabar and the guys that you're really relying on who just didn't come through yesterday. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens when Casey Jansen gets back, who gets sent down. I think it'll probably be Chad Jenkins. And then if the Blue Jays do make another move beyond that, then they're going to be in the situation where they're going to have to lose somebody because there really isn't anyone who has any options left. The only one is Aaron Loop, and I know for a fact that the Blue Jays are not going to demote him. So they're going to lose somebody if they have to make another move beyond the Casey Jansen activation when he's ready. So for me, that's, I think they're going to try to put it off as long as they can, and with Dustin McGowan pitching well, there's no need to make a move.
Well, I hope you're right. I do not want to see them rush him up here, even for one start or a short stint. I'd like to see him spend a little more time down there as well.
Well, I think that a short stint in the majors for Stroman would be a really poor personnel decision for the Blue Jays, because similar to the decision last year to bring Sean Nolan up for one start, it would involve having to put him on the 40-man roster and having to expose somebody else to waivers. So, you know, it's a case where the Blue Jays have a couple of guys on their 40-man roster already who could probably fill a spot if needed, and that's, you know, Liam Hendricks, who has also been outstanding with Buffalo. And he's only 25. He's not an old guy. He's got more major league experience, despite the fact that, you know, he hasn't done all that well in the majors. Actually, he hasn't done well at all when he was with the Twins. But Hendricks has been outstanding this year. He's, you know, pitched, about 20 or 21 innings this season and has 21 strikeouts and no walks. So it's not like Hendricks has been chopped liver this year. And Sean Nolan is still hanging in there, and I think a lot of people are underestimating or has forgotten about Sean Nolan with all the hubbub around Stroman. But Nolan has been very effective this year, and he could also be a guy who's already on the 40-man roster who could be called up if necessary.
All right, let's skip to today's interviews. The gentleman that you sat down with this spring, the first one that you will talk to in this interview is Frank Viola III. Why don't you tell our listeners who may not know who he is a little bit about him and how he came to the Blue Jays?
Well, Frank, I mean, a lot of, you know, who he is and how he came to the Blue Jays is talked about in our interview, but a quick version of that is that Frank is the son of Frank Viola Jr., who is, you know, the well-known major league pitcher who, you know, played with the Blue Jays a little bit at the end of his career, but he had a 17-year major league career with a Cy Young Award, three All-Star appearances, you know, a very great pitcher, you know, in the 80s and first half of the 90s. And his son, you know, Frank III, is a guy who is, I think, fairly highly touted for a while, but he you know, came into injury trouble. And he had arm trouble. I think he had Tommy John surgery. Then he had knee issues. And for a while he was out of baseball. And he tried coming back in the independent leagues. And I think he was playing around with the knuckleball. And he's decided to really make a concerted effort to become a knuckleballer and spent some time this winter with R.A. Dickey and learning from him. And the Blue Jays decided to bring him in, whether it's to help, you know, some of the catchers learn how to catch the knuckleball in preparation for them being the guys who catch R.A. Dickey, or whether they're looking to sort of create a kind of advanced class in knuckleball pitching with R.A. Dickey as the mentor. I know that in spring training, Dickey spent a day at the minor league complex working with Viola as well. So there's definitely the opportunity to share information. And Frank III, Frank, he's a great guy. I spoke to him after the interview during some of the games a couple times, and a very humble guy. He understands, you know, this is probably one of his last shots. He understands that, you know, he's kind of an oddball in baseball. He's a very intelligent guy. I think he sees the game very differently than some of the other players. He's very philosophical about it. So he's a great guy to talk to, and it's really, you know, just an interesting story.
All right, now tell me a little bit about Yusuf Carter.
Carter is definitely kind of the opposite of Viola in terms of his personality. He's very quiet. He's very, very big fellow, very physically imposing. And you could tell he's spent a lot of time in the weight room. But he's also very soft-spoken, very nice guy, and very thoughtful. And, you know, he's a catcher that the Blue Jays signed to a minor league contract. He's been playing with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. He's sort of been a backup guy. He can play first base as well, and he's DH'd a little bit as well on top of catching and playing first base. He's got a lot of power. He signed out of the independent leagues where he played over the past couple of seasons, and he hit 16 home runs in just 73 games last year in the Atlantic League. So he's definitely got a power bat. Again, he's not a younger guy. He's 29, but he's definitely in excellent physical condition. He's definitely very athletic, very strong, and he's sort of almost a mentor for some of the younger players, I think, in terms of being experienced. He'd been around in a few systems. He was originally signed by the Cubs, and he played with the Cubs in the Oakland A's systems before playing in independent ball starting in 2011.
All right, let's play those interviews now.
Welcome back to the podcast. I'm here with Frank Viola III. Frank signed a minor league contract with the Toronto Blue Jays to resurrect his career as a knuckleballer. And he's here in camp, and he's been studying under the tutelage of the pitching coaches as well as R.A. Dickey. So welcome to the podcast, Frank.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess the first question that I want to ask you is, you do have some Blue Jays bloodlines with your dad, who played, I think it was 4 games with the Toronto Blue Jays right at the end of his career. In signing with the Blue Jays, did your dad have any input on that? Did he tell you anything about the organization?
He explained he loved the organization, and he got an opportunity to finish his career out with them. It's great people, and being here for a couple weeks now, they are great people, and it's a nice opportunity.
And does the presence of a couple of other knuckleballers like Tomooka and R.A. Dickey obviously make it an easier choice to come here?
Oh, absolutely. Being around R.A. is a blessing in general. I got to spend a month with him in January, a little over a month in January, February, training under him. And Tomo being here, I have someone to relate with, someone that could kind of bounce ideas off of, and we could do some extra work together. And it's fun having someone else doing the same thing as you're doing, and having the same path, because it's completely different than a conventional.
Now, I have read that you did have a tryout with the Mets a few years ago, and I guess nothing really came of that, but it was the sort of the first time you threw your knuckleball for Dickey. Was that the first time you had met him?
That was the first time I met him. You know, back then it was just more dabbling. I'd only been throwing it for about a month back then, and I still have so much to learn, but I was just, I don't even know how to explain it. I was not in a position to be throwing a knuckleball to any hitters at that point. But took a lot in, took a lot away from what RA had to say, and dabbled with it. But, you know, to this point, decided to do some business stuff in that juncture in my life. And this December really, really buckled down and got on the phone with him and started working hard on it, and it came to fruition. So
now, going back even further, you were pitching in an independent league, I believe it was 2010.
Yes.
And I read that you had a tryout after that season, and sounded like from that interview that I read that it was a little bit of a frustrating experience where you were getting hitters out, you were throwing really well, but because you probably didn't throw 93, 94 miles an hour, teams didn't really want to have a look at you.
You know, it took a while to come back from the Tommy John ACL stuff, and the arm strength came back relatively quick and actually gained on it, but the feel wasn't there for a while, even in 2010, because I had taken a year and a half off before then. But I trained really hard, and I got myself in the best shape of my life. At that point, I'm in better shape now. I never really had a whole lot of trouble getting outside. I didn't know how to pitch quite yet. I didn't listen to my dad. I don't think a lot of sons listen to their dads because we're stupid. But yeah, it was just one of those things where you threw well, you thought you knew you were throwing the ball well, you're getting outs, and nobody took notice because you don't throw hard. You don't have anything that stands out. I never had a pitch I could go to that I knew, a guy like Carter, I couldn't strike him out. I could get him 0-2, 1-2, but he was going to put the ball in play. So if I didn't get early contact outs, I was kind of in trouble. I think they knew that. Back then I didn't know that, but I knew I was going to have to pitch. But looking back, there was really not a great chance of a major league career there as a conventional.
So how do you work on the knuckleball? And what are the things that you're concentrating on? What are the things that you go out there and do? I saw you throw in the bullpen, and I did notice that you throw much harder than Tomooka does. Mm-hmm. What are you trying to do to improve that knuckleball besides simply repetition?
Oh, man. Repetition is key. Just making sure you're doing the proper things. It's all mechanical. So I kind of relate it to golf. I've been talking to, you know, Ari's my mentor. Tim Wakefield's also a big part of it for me because he's a golfer. So I at one point in my life, I went from like an 8 handicap to a +2 in like a 6-month period, but I took steps forward. Then I had to take 3 steps back to take 2 steps forward past there. So it's getting the feel for it and breaking down something that's going on. So let it be holding your wrist angle or keeping the ball outside your hip line or getting on top and creating a circle or, you know, just throwing the ball with conviction. Because I think the toughest part about throwing a knuckleball is you want to be perfect. You want to kill the spin every time. And that's where RA is a big help because he's a different kind of knuckleballer. He's not a kill the spin all the time knuckleballer. Like Wakefield, just a ninja. I think he was born to throw the ball without spin. It's a joke. I mean, I don't think anybody will ever throw a knuckleball like Tim Wakefield ever. So I know RA talks about finding your own personality with the pitch. And it's just kind of freeing your mind knowing that it's going to be steps, small steps, and taking those small steps and appreciating them. But that's where I'm at right now, just finding the feel, killing the spin, checking hitters' reactions, how they swing at it, how the catcher's catching it. A lot of people think when the catcher misses it a lot, it's a good knuckleball. It has nothing to do with that. Just consistency, like you said. I know it's a word that nobody likes to hear, but it really is consistency.
Well, you know, from everybody I've talked to around baseball, that it is that consistency that everybody is looking for because it is such a long season, because, you know, there is so much repetition and so much daily activity that it's achieving that consistency every day and being able to, regardless of the results, because they're not always going to be the same every day, but achieving that consistency, at least in the process, is the most important thing.
Absolutely. You know, being who I am with my dad, being my dad, and I know Carter can relate because he's in the bloodline as well, and being around the guys we've been around, I think the one thing that I'm sure you'll agree, the thing that separates a major league player from a minor league player is consistency. That's all it is. If you watch minor league pitchers, he's got both. Minor league guys are probably more exciting to catch or watch than the big league guys in the first 10 pitches, but then it's just, it's not the same anymore. 10 pitches, I would take a double A guy over a major league guy as far as nastiness, but they can't repeat yet. And I'm still in the same place, which is why I'm here. So I think that's the biggest difference, is being able to repeat. I mean, I've watched my dad and Clemens for years, and those guys, like I said, they're not that impressive. They have one pitch that's stupid impressive, but they just don't miss. You can put your glove up and they just don't miss. It's incredible.
And I'll make a note here that we're actually also joined by Yusuf Carter, who also was signed by the Blue Jays on a minor league contract. He's been sitting and listening to us talk already. Welcome to the podcast, Yusuf.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So you two, as Frank mentioned, you two have some bloodlines with the Blue Jays. Your uncle is Joe Carter. Can you tell us about sort of, you know, what you knew about the Blue Jays coming into this season?
He basically told me that it was a good organization. You know, they were going to give me the best chance and the best opportunity to go out there and show what I could do and just give me a fair chance. And honestly, that's all that I was looking for. I just wanted to show that I could still play and that I still was able to go out there and compete.
And like Frank, you also had some experiences outside of affiliated baseball. You've been in independent ball for the past few years. What's that experience like when you go and you're still playing professionally, and I'm sure the competition is still very good, but it's a matter of just getting another chance. What's that experience like?
Yeah, it's definitely it's a good experience. I'm grateful for those leagues because it gives guys that really wants to continue their career a chance to keep playing at a high level also, because you're playing against former big leaguers, guys that had big league time, you know, Triple-A time veterans, you know, guys that have been in the minor leagues a good while, so you can't just go out there and just expect to throw your hat on the field and win or take over. But it it definitely keeps you in game mode, and so if you do get an opportunity, you won't feel like you've lost that edge or anything like that. But it's a great league, great leagues out there, and it keeps you ready.
And I know that I'm not sure if you were drafted by the A's, but you were with them for a fairly lengthy period of time. Were they the organization that turned you into a catcher? Because I believe you started your first year or two, you were an outfielder mostly. What was sort of that process? Because I know there's another guy that I've spoken to in this camp, Derek Chung, who last year was really his first year playing professionally as a catcher. I'm interested to hear what it's like as a position player plays another position, what that transition is like.
I mean, for me, honestly, I've always been I have an athletic ability, so I've always been able to play multiple positions. So I got drafted as an outfielder, then drafted as a catcher, then a catcher again. So I got drafted with the Cubs as an catcher. But I was progressing a little slower than they would like, and I would still play outfield on my off days. So they gave me the option to play outfield or catch. And I said, all right, I'll play outfield. And they moved me up faster from there. But so I played my time over there in the outfield. But winter 2009, Oakland picked me up in the Rule 5 draft because they knew I called. They actually drafted me my first year of junior college, but I didn't sign. So they said, all right, well, we just picked you up in the Rule 5 draft, but we want you to catch again. So I said, all right, well, whatever works. I haven't done it in 3 years, so I'll break out the old mitt again and get the gear on. But honestly, from that point on, it was just trying to relearn everything because I've had the basic skills, you know, skills to get by. But as far as a professional level, trying to do things the right way consistently and learning, you know, the ins and outs, the little mechanics that makes a big difference in the professional level, you know, that slows the game down, I just had to relearn everything and just totally focus on that and dedicate my time and everything into strictly catching.
And what's your favorite part of catching?
Favorite part of catching would be probably just calling a good game, you know, me and the pitchers on that same page, and it's just like lights out. We got that momentum going. We just in sync, and just, the hitters are just walking back to the dugout or getting out, and everything's moving fast. So I would say that that's probably the best part, because it keeps the game moving, it keeps the team upbeat, and it keeps the everybody ready.
And Frank, have you thrown to Yusuf yet?
I'll say this. Yusuf, I've watched him catch, and he's a great catcher, and he's mechanically sound. He is consistent, but with a knuckleball, it's almost like everything he works on, throw it out the window and just survive.
Get it done.
So who have you been throwing to most of the time?
Munoz is mostly an Ochenko. And they're receiving it pretty well. They're getting used to it now. I think it just takes a little time to get used to it. I know Carter caught Oka the other day, and like you said, Toma throws it a lot slower than I do. I mean, we're relatively in the game. I'm throwing a little slower right now to get the feel for it in the game, but when I do throw it, it's going to be more in the 70, low 70s, eventually taking the bullpen to the game. But we had the wind in the face the other day, and Toma was throwing it like 55. And
floating up there.
Yeah, it's tough. And I was looking at Yusuf, and I was like, you know, it's tough catching, especially when it's coming that slow, and then it dives. So it's almost like trying to catch the ball at a 90-degree angle. It's coming straight down, so it's just rough.
And I'll come back to Yusuf. Who have you really enjoyed catching so far?
It's been a lot of guys that I've actually enjoyed catching. I mean, with it being spring training, you see a lot of guys so quickly, so you really don't really get a chance to learn them as fast as you would like. But I mean, I had fun catching my old teammate Mickey Story, so it was fun to reunite with him and get back out there like old times again.
I'll just ask you a quick question because Mickey Story's kind of been he's been a fascination for me, because I've seen him pitch.
Yeah.
And he doesn't throw hard, but he strikes a lot of guys out. Like, what is it? He throws like a 68-mile-an-hour curveball, and he's, you know, maxing out at 89. And what is it about Mickey Story?
Mickey, I call Mickey the sleeper, man, because you see him up there. He's not a big guy. He's small, slim guy. But when he can throw that curveball anytime, any count to anyone, and that kind of keeps you balanced. But he also has, like Frank was saying, he has accuracy. So he can throw where he wants to. So he may get you looking for that big breaking ball, but then he'll sneak a fastball right there on the corner, and then you're not ready for it. So, but like you said, he has that one pitch that gets guys out, and he's learned a slider and a changeup too. So he's definitely progressed his pitching arsenal since we were together.
All right, well, I'm going to let you guys go. I know it's early in the morning, and you guys have work to do, but thanks very much for joining us. We've been here with Yusuf Carter and Frank Viola III, and thanks for joining us on the Canadian Baseball Network podcast.
All right,
thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
All right, welcome back. At the end of that interview, Jay, Yusuf Carter and you were talking about Mickey Story, who the Blue Jays recently let go. Tell me, do you think that, based on what he said, a guy who hits a spot, do you think that's going to be something that the Jays are going to end up regretting?
Well, you know, regret is a tricky word. I mean, teams always regret things that they have to do, but, you know, it's a very tough game in terms of the decisions that teams have to make. You know, somebody had to go in order to make room on the roster when the Blue Jays called up Chris Getz. And, you know, it's never an easy decision. It's always somebody being personally affected. I think the Blue Jays felt they had a lot of depth in the bullpen. They still have several guys in Buffalo who, you know, Neil Wagner. They've got John Stilson, who isn't necessarily off to the great start this year. And I think as, you know, as I talked about with Yusuf, Mickey Story, I think he kind of gets lost in the shuffle a lot of times because he's not that prototypical hard-throwing righty that you want to see. You know, he's a softer tosser, and he's a finesse guy who throws backwards a lot of times. You know, pitches backwards. You know, he'll start hitters off with curveballs rather than fastballs. But, you know, I don't know if they'll regret it, because I don't necessarily think that a big league general manager can can live in regret. I think they have to make decisions and then move forward. So I don't think they'll regret it, but I think Mickey Story is going to catch on somewhere else. I think that's probably why they released him rather than designating him for assignment and trying to hold on. I think that was done, I think, with him in mind. They knew that, you know, he was well down on the depth chart, and he probably wouldn't get much of a look, if at all, with the Blue Jays, and I think they were trying to give him the opportunity to get a job somewhere else by just giving him his release.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he had one before we posted this episode.
That's very possible. I know that Jeremy Jeffress, when he chose free agency rather than an outright assignment to the minors, it was reported very quickly that he had offers from several teams, and he ended up signing a deal with the Brewers. So he's in the minor leagues with them. And if he shows that he's going to be able to, you know, throw strikes, he'll be up with the major league team, I think. And I think the same thing with Story. Story was actually very, very good with the Houston Astros in 2012. I think he pitched about 35 or 40 innings in the majors and had, you know, for a guy who doesn't throw hard, his strikeout rate was fantastic. It was, I think, above 9 or 10 per 9 innings, and he's really a guy who's very deceptive and has shown that he can get major league hitters out. So I have very little concern about him not being able to find a job fairly soon.
All right. With that, I think we'll wrap up today's episode. I want to thank you for coming on the show again, Jay. And before we wrap up, why don't you tell everybody one more time where they can get the Blue Jays Minor League Handbook?
Well, the Blue Jays Minor League Handbook is available at smashwords.com, smashwords.com. Just search for 2014 Toronto Blue Jays Minor League Handbook, and you'll find it right away. It's available there for $7.99 U.S. Just about all the players we've been talking about, plus more. If you want to follow the Blue Jays and the minor league affiliates, you can get all of the information you need to really know what's going on from the minor league handbook.
Excellent. Thanks a lot. And as always, I want to thank our regular supporters, Effective Business Video, for the production for our show, and the Isotopes for providing the music. We'll be back soon with our draft episodes. They'll be coming up in the coming weeks as we lead up to the 2014 MLB draft. If you have suggestions for our show, please give us an email at podcast@CanadianBaseballNetwork.com. Thanks for listening to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast. I'm Peter Bean with Jay Blue, signing off.